Late night bench, bright screen glow.
Same simple. Welcome to Bates by Bates, the paper cast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. You know, usually when we think about the proteins inside our bodies, we picture these incredibly precise, highly structured biological machines. I mean, they fold into these intricate 3D origami shapes, and that specific shape dictates exactly what they do. But there are rebels in our cells. There's a whole class of proteins that completely lack a stable 3D structure. They are floppy, they're flexible, and they are known as low-complexity domains. So what really happens when these supposedly shapeless proteins suddenly decide to link together to form vital cellular structures, or worse, toxic clumps? And how could this change our approach to treating devastating neurological diseases?
Well, it is honestly one of the most persistent mysteries in structural biology today. For decades, researchers looked at these unstructured proteins and, you know, essentially hit a wall.
Right, because they don't fold into that rigid shape we're used to seeing.
Exactly. The traditional tools we use to study proteins just couldn't capture them. So the field mostly assumed their behavior was driven by generic, bulk, chemical properties. The idea that they had specific hidden rules governing how they interact, well, it seemed almost impossible to prove with the technology we had at the time.
Today, we celebrate the work of Ryan L. Beckner, Glenn Lizak, and their research team at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center, who have advanced our understanding of protein self-association. Our mission in this deep dive is to explore their 2026 PNAS paper, Chiral Inversion Mutagenesis Identifies Geometrically Constrained Residues Within Self-Associating Low-Complexity Domains, and Uncover the Hidden Structural Rules of These Shapeless Proteins.
To fully grasp the magnitude of what this team accomplished, we really need to establish what a low-complexity domain, or an LCD, actually looks like on a molecular level.
Okay, so paint a picture for us. What are we looking at?
Right, so imagine a typical, highly structured protein as a complex novel. It uses all 20 letters of the amino acid alphabet to build a very specific, rigid narrative. An LCD, by contrast, is like a passage written using mostly just three or four letters, repeating in various combinations.
So, because they are missing the full alphabet of building blocks, they just, they can't fold themselves up into a neat, stable package.
Exactly. They completely lack the diverse chemical interactions required to lock into a permanent 3D fold. And as a result, they remain highly solvent accessible.
Meaning they are just out there exposed to the water inside the cell.
Yeah, exposed to the watery environment in a constantly shifting, totally disordered state.
If I'm hearing this, I'm probably wondering why my cells are even tolerating these floppy, disordered proteins in the first place. I mean, are they just biological junk left over from evolution?
Oh, not at all. That flexibility is actually a crucial biological feature. LCD oligomerization, which is just the process of these proteins linking together to form larger assemblies, actually drives essential cellular functions.
Like what kind of functions?
Well, for example, they are responsible for the selective permeability of the nuclear pore barrier.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they create this dynamic gel-like mesh that, you know, decides which molecules are allowed to enter the cell's nucleus and which ones are kept out.
Okay, so they form these essential temporary networks. But there is a well-documented dark side to this, right?
There is, yes. The problem arises when these LCDs aggregate pathologically. Instead of forming a temporary functional network and then releasing, they clump together in ways they absolutely shouldn't.
Forming those rigid fibers we always hear about.
Yes, they form rigid, insoluble fibers. And this pathological aggregation is a primary driver behind severe neurodegenerative diseases. We're talking ALS, Alzheimer's, and certain peripheral neuropathies.
Wow.
Yeah, both familial, meaning inherited, and sporadic forms of these diseases are heavily linked to these toxic clumps building up and eventually killing the neurons.
Okay, let's unpack this. If they don't have a rigid 3D shape, how can we possibly find specific, targetable hotspots where they connect? Because if I'm picturing a sloppy string, and scientists historically thought they just stuck together using bulk properties like overall charge or hydrophobicity, then we're basically talking about magnets in a bag.
Magnets in a bag is actually a perfect way to describe the old way of thinking.
Right, because if you put a bunch of magnets in a bag, they're going to clump together no matter how you orient them. There's no specific lock and key. It's just global attraction.
And that is precisely the roadblock the scientific community has been stuck at. I mean, if it's just magnets in a bag or bulk hydrophobicity, then you can't design a highly specific drug to stop it.
Right.
Traditional structural biology relies heavily on X-ray crystallography, where you crystallize a protein to see its 3D structure, but you cannot crystallize a shifting floppy string.
Because it's constantly moving.
Exactly. You can't look at a 3D model to find the binding pocket, because the pocket simply doesn't exist until the exact moment the proteins physically touch each other.
I'm struggling to picture how you even begin to test that. If the protein is just wiggling around randomly, how do you prove that there is a specific structural rule at play?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you realize you need a radically different experimental approach. You can't just change the chemical makeup of the protein, like swapping a positively charged amino acid for a negative one.
Because that just alters the bulk properties, right? The magnets.
Exactly. To prove that physical geometry matters, they had to leave the chemistry entirely identical and manipulate the physical shape of the protein backbone itself.
And this brings us to the core methodology of the paper. They use a technique called chiral inversion mutagenesis, or CHIRM.
Yes, CHIRM. To understand CHIRM, we have to talk about chirality, which is basically a molecule's handedness. In nature, life on Earth almost exclusively uses what we call L amino acids.
Which are the left-handed ones.
Correct. You can think of them as left-handed building blocks. Every protein in your body, every enzyme, every receptor is built out of these left-handed amino acids. But every left-hand molecule has a perfect mirror image, a D amino acid, which is right-handed.
Let's use an analogy here for the listener. Think about building a long chain out of left-handed gloves.
Yes.
You're linking them all together, holding hands in a long line. The chemistry of the glove, the cotton, the weight, the material, it is identical to a right-handed glove.
Right, the material is exactly the same.
But if you suddenly insert a right-handed glove into that chain, you haven't changed the material at all, but you have completely disrupted the physical geometry. I mean, the thumb is pointing the wrong way. The fingers don't naturally interlock with the left-handed glove next to it.
That analogy captures the exact mechanism perfectly. Because the fingers don't interlock, the local structure fails. CHIRM utilizes advanced synthetic protein chemistry to do just that.
Wow, so they're just swapping them out.
Yes, the researchers systematically swapped specific, natural left-handed L amino acids for their exact mirror image. Right-handed D amino acids right in the middle of these floppy LCDs. They kept the chemical properties, the charge, the hydrophobicity 100% identical. They only changed the 3D orientation in space.
But wait, cells only know how to read DNA to make left-handed L amino acids.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't just genetically engineer a bacterium to suddenly start weaving right-handed D amino acids into a protein. How on earth did they actually build these things?
That is the major technical hurdle they had to overcome, for sure. They used a sophisticated technique called expressed protein ligation, or EPL.
Okay, what does that actually look like in the lab?
Essentially, they take a hybrid approach. First, they use standard biological methods, like growing bacteria, to produce one half of the protein.
Right, the normal biological way.
Exactly, but the other half, the specific LCD segment they want to manipulate with right-handed amino acids, they have to synthesize that entirely from scratch.
Chemically? In the test tube?
Chemically, yes. Amino acid by amino acid, using solid phase peptide synthesis.
So they have a biological half and a synthetic half. How do they get them to stick together?
They engineer a highly reactive chemical group, usually a thioester, onto the end of the biological half, and a reactive cysteine onto the synthetic half.
Oh, so they act like hooks.
Yeah, exactly. When you mix them together under the right conditions, those chemical hooks snap together, permanently stitching the two halves into one continuous full-length protein.
That sounds incredibly tedious.
Oh, it is. It is a highly laborious, material-intensive process, but it's really the only way to test these mirror image swaps with pinpoint accuracy within a larger biological protein.
Okay, so they have successfully built these hybrid proteins. Some are completely normal, and some have these specific mirror image swaps hidden inside their LCDs. How do they actually measure if these proteins were still sticking to each other?
They primarily relied on two robust biochemical assays. The first is a GST pull-down assay, which is essentially molecular fishing.
Molecular fishing. I like that.
Yeah, they take one version of the protein, attach a specific tag to it called GST, and anchor it to a microscopic bead. That's the bait. Then they pour in a liquid solution containing the other proteins.
And if they stick, you catch them.
Precisely. If the proteins naturally associate, the free-floating ones will stick to the bait. You wash everything else away, pull out the beads, and literally measure how much protein you caught.
And what was the second test?
The second is a turbidity assay. It relies on a very simple physical principle. When these LCD proteins self-associate and form larger networks or clumps in a clear liquid buffer, the liquid actually turns cloudy or turbid.
So you just measure the cloudiness.
Right. By shining light through the sample and measuring how much light is blocked by that cloudiness, you get a highly accurate direct readout of how much the proteins are interacting in real time.
So we have the tools, the assays, and the engineered proteins. Let's look at the first major target they investigated. That's a protein called emerin, right?
Yes, emerin is a highly relevant test subject. It is an inner nuclear lamina protein. Its job is to help provide mechanical stability to the membranes surrounding the nucleus of your cells.
Especially in places that get a lot of wear and tear, I'm assuming.
Exactly, particularly in tissues that undergo a lot of mechanical stress, like your heart and skeletal muscle. When genetic mutations occur in emerin, it causes X-linked Emery-Dreifuss muscular dystrophy.
Which is pretty severe.
It is. It's characterized by early onset joint contractures and severe heart problems.
And previous studies had already hinted that the floppy LCD region of emerin was the culprit here.
Yes. Previous clinical research showed that mutations causing the emerin LCD to become overly sticky and self-associate too strongly are what drive the pathology of the disease.
But the LCD is a long, floppy string. Before they committed to synthesizing dozens of custom right-handed variants, which we established is hugely labor-intensive, they needed to narrow down the search area, didn't they?
Exactly. To find the specific neighborhood responsible for the stickiness, they first deployed a sweeping technique called proline insertion.
Oh, I've heard of proline being called a helix breaker in biology. Why insert proline? What does adding a kink actually do to the stickiness?
Well, proline is structurally unique among the amino acids. Its side chain actually loops back and bonds to its own backbone nitrogen. Because of this closed ring structure, it lacks the necessary hydrogen atom to participate in normal backbone hydrogen bonding.
Meaning it can't lay flat.
Right. If a floppy protein is trying to temporarily stretch out and form a beta strand, kind of like a flat piece of Velcro trying to stick to another protein, inserting a proline forces a rigid, sharp turn in the backbone, it completely breaks the strand.
So they just drop these in to see where the Velcro broke?
Yes, exactly. By systematically dropping prolines into different spots along the emerin LCD, they found a hot spot between residues 188 and 201, where inserting that kink totally destroyed the protein's ability to self-associate.
So they found the exact neighborhood. Now they know where to focus the chiral inversion mutagenesis.
And this is where the data gets really fascinating. They initiated what they call a 3XD scan across this 188 to 201 hotspot.
What does 3XD actually mean in this context?
This means they walked down the sequence, synthesizing variants where they flipped three adjacent amino acids at a time into their right-handed mirror images. They used a window of three because it provides a strong structural disruption without having to individually synthesize every single point mutation right away.
Okay, and what happened when they tested these 3XD variants in the pull-down and turbidity assays?
The binding absolutely plummeted. When they inverted three amino acids within that specific hotspot, they saw the self-association drop by nearly 90% compared to the normal wild-type protein.
Wow.
Yeah, we are talking an 8.8-fold, 7.9-fold, and 6.2-fold reduction in pull-down, depending on the exact spot.
Here's where it gets really interesting. They wanted to know the absolute minimum disruption required, so they pushed the system to its limit. They synthesized a variant where they flipped just one single amino acid to its mirror image.
Yes, a 1XD inversion.
Right, a 1XD inversion. And doing that caused a massive 6.4-fold decrease in turbidity. I mean, one single amino acid out of the entire protein chain, maintaining its exact same chemical identity, but just pointing its atomic backbone in the mirror image direction, and the whole biological interaction just crashes.
Which is the definitive proof against the magnets in a bag theory. If these proteins were just relying on bulk stickiness, like global charge or overall hydrophobicity, slaying the geometry of a single amino acid wouldn't matter at all.
Because the charge is still there.
Exactly. The chemical properties are mathematically identical. The only thing that changed was the precise 3D orientation. This proves the interaction is heavily dependent on a specific structural geometry.
If a left hand can't hold a right hand well, a logical next question would be, well, what if they are all right hands? The paper details an experiment that tests this, the ALDI rescue experiment.
I love this part. This is a masterclass in experimental design. The researchers asked, if the failure is caused by a geometric mismatch between left and right-handed building blocks, What happens if we synthesize the entire interacting hotspot exclusively out of mirror image D amino acids?
So they built a completely right-handed locking mechanism.
Precisely, and when they tested this all D variant against itself, self-association was completely restored.
Wait, really?
Yeah. The all D right-handed pieces function perfectly with other all D right-handed pieces. They clump together just as efficiently as the normal left-handed proteins did with each other. This is the smoking gun. It definitively proves that the interaction is geometrically constrained and relies on a highly specific symmetrical locking mechanism.
But if they only proved this symmetry in one nuclear protein, it might just be a strange exception in biology, right? I mean, they needed to test this in a completely different biological system to be sure.
Absolutely. So they shifted their focus to a second protein, neurofilament light chain, or NEFL. This is a critical structural protein in neurons. It basically forms the scaffolding inside nerve fibers.
And mutations here cause a different disease.
Right. Mutations in the head domain of NEFL cause Charcot-Marie-Tooth neuropathy, which is a debilitating disease that affects the peripheral nerves.
And peripheral nerves are some of the longest cells in the human body, extending from the spinal cord all the way down to your toes.
Exactly. Because they are so incredibly long, they rely heavily on internal scaffolding to transport materials and maintain their overall structure.
So when the scaffolding breaks down, the nerve fails.
Yes. When the NEFL head domain, which is a classic disordered LCD, mutates and self-associates pathologically, it forms clumps at the cell body. The structural scaffolding fails, the long nerve axon degenerates, and the patient experiences severe muscle weakness and loss of sensation.
So they needed to map the exact hotspot in NEFL, just like they did with Emerin. But they approached it slightly differently this time, right?
They did. Because the NEFL head domain is relatively short, they bypassed the initial proline scan altogether. Instead, they went straight to a 5XD CHIM scan. They used a slightly wider 5-residue window to efficiently sweep the entire region.
So walking across the sequence, flipping 5 amino acids at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And what did the hard data from that sweep show?
They found a sharply defined, geometrically constrained motif localized between residues 22 and 41. When they introduced the mirror image inversions within this specific window, they saw up to a 20-fold decrease in self-association. It practically flatlined.
20-fold, wow.
Yeah, and this is crucial. If they made those exact same right-handed inversions, just a few amino acids down the chain, entirely outside of that 22 to 41 window, the protein clumped together perfectly normally.
That implies the structural requirement is incredibly localized. Let's define what we're actually seeing here. The paper mentions these proteins form transient elements. What exactly is a cross-beta interaction or an enantioselective interaction?
Those are critical concepts here. Enantioselective simply means that the protein specifically selects its partner based purely on its mirror image geometry. It will only bind to a matching shape, not its mirror opposite.
And the cross-beta part.
Cross-beta interactions describe the temporary physical shape they take. When two of these floppy LCD strands bump into each other at the right orientation, they temporarily straighten out and line up side by side like a zipper, forming a brief rigid sheet, a beta sheet.
So they spend 99% of their time as a wiggling string. But for a fraction of a second, when they meet their specific partner, they adopt a highly rigid, exact shape to lock in.
Yes, exactly. And this fundamentally shifts our understanding of disorder in biology. It is not true chaos. It is conditional order.
So what does this all mean? If we zoom out from the synthetic amino acids and the test tubes, how does this actually change the landscape of molecular medicine?
Well, it changes the paradigm for drug discovery. For decades, drug designers have been paralyzed by these neurodegenerative diseases because traditional small molecule drugs need a stable, pre-existing pocket to sit in, basically a keyhole.
Right. If the target protein is just a shifting, unstructured blob most of the time, there's nowhere for the drug to grab onto.
Exactly. But this research proves that at the exact moment they interact, they do form a precise, predictable structure.
So instead of trying to target a ghost, we are targeting the zipper right as it attempts to close.
That's a great analogy. By proving that LCDs rely on highly specific, geometrically constrained hotspots rather than just bulk stickiness, we now have precise structural targets. In the future, this could allow clinical researchers to design drugs that specifically block the exact enantioselective interactions causing toxic aggregation in neurodegenerative diseases.
That is a massive leap forward. But to maintain scientific rigor, we should definitely discuss the limitations of the study as it stands right now.
We must, yeah. The most immediate limitation is the methodology itself. Expressed protein ligation and synthesizing right-handed peptides is highly specialized, expensive, and time-consuming.
Because you are basically handcrafting proteins.
Right, you are handcrafting them. That means doing deep whole protein geometric scanning across massive libraries of hundreds of different disease-linked proteins is currently an enormous bottleneck. You can't just easily automate this on a massive scale yet.
And there's also the environment where these tests were conducted, right? The test tubes.
Yes, these experiments were performed in reconstituted test tube assays. They used highly purified proteins in controlled, simple liquid environments. That provides beautifully clear data, but it is vastly different from the chaotic, crowded interior of a living human cell.
Where thousands of other proteins and complex molecules are just constantly bumping into each other.
Exactly. Moving this technique into cellular environments remains a significant technical hurdle for future research.
Right. Well, this deep dive reveals that supposedly shapeless, low-complexity domains actually rely on strict, geometrically constrained structural hotspots to interact. By utilizing synthetic mirror image amino acids, researchers have proven that the physical geometry of the protein backbone is just as critical as its chemical makeup. What does this mean for the future of drug design when the proteins we are trying to target spend most of their time without a fixed shape? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
Late night bench, bright screen glow. Same simple letters, different flow. Left hand smile makes patterns whole. One small flip, the story folds. Twisted the alpha, what you been? A quiet hinge, you can't pretend. Hot spot humming in the chain. One wrong turn, it won't remain. Keep it in line, keep it alive. Chiral spark where the shapes collide. If you turn one stone, the whole thing slides. Backbone truth you can't divide. Oh, 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 oh. Collide, map the spots where the faults can hide.